Moving along, we are up to Pasuk Vav. Just to recap quickly, the first opening psukim sets the stage. Yeshua is charged with taking Bnei Israel into the land of Israel. We spoke about the borders, boundaries. We had a whole discussion about the significance of crossing the Jordan. We talked about the box of Eretz Canaan in contradistinction to the broad arena in which the Jewish people will operate, from the world of the Nile to the Euphrates. Pasuk Hey, actually, let's go back one pasuk. Lo yitzev ish lefanecha. This is all part of the charge to go and to conquer the land of Israel. Lo yitzev ish lefanecha. No man will stand before you or against you, meaning nobody will stop you. If you follow God's instructions, you will be successful. Kol yemei chayecha, your entire life. Kasher hayiti im Moshe eyeimach lo arpecha velo ezveka. As I was with Moshe, I will be with you. I will not abandon you. I will not let you go. Kasher hayiti im Moshe is a very profound message, a powerful statement to Yoshua. Yeshua needs to know that. He needs to know it. The people need to know it. There's a link to Moshe. We've spoken about that at length. And God is assuring Yeshua that that will continue. That will continue. And then we get to Pasuk Vav. Chazak ve'ematz. Chazak ve'ematz means be strong and usually translated as be strong and courageous. Ometz. It's usually referenced to Ometz Lev, which is closest translation, accurate translation is probably courage. Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous. It's a double expression, it's an idiomatic expression, it's a code phrase. We'll see what the code phrase is in a moment. But that's the charge to Yoshua. Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous. Are we sure, Tanakh? Oh yeah, okay. Chazak v'ematz ki ata tanchil et ha'am hazev et ha'aretz shenishbati la'avotam latet lahem. Because you will cause Israel, or cause this people, allow this people to inherit the land that I have sworn to their forefathers. And you are responsible. You are going to bring them into the land, help them conquer the land, and ultimately start the process of this land being passed down as a nachala, as an inheritance. You are going to bring them to conquer this land. And to do so, chazak ve'emas, you need strength and courage. Pasuk Zayin. Rak chazak ve'emas me'od. Be very strong and courageous. Lishmor la'asot k'chol atara asher tzivcha Moshe avdi al tosu mimenu. To follow all of the laws of the Torah that I have commanded Moshe, my servant, do not veer from the laws of the Torah, yamin usmol, right or left. Leman taskil b'chol asher telech. Then you will be successful in all that you will do. Lo yamush sefer haTorah zeh mipicha. This sefer Torah shall not leave your lips. V'higita bo yamam v'layla, and you will engage in it, delve in it, study it, commit yourselves to it, day and night. Very famous phrase, a phrase that has been used in many, many connotations and many applications. V'gita bo yamam v'layla. Lahagot? To grasp, to engage, to study, to delve. Probably the Leman tishmol asot kochol hakatuv bo, and that's in order that you should be able to guard and do everything that is written therein. Ki az tatzliach, then you will be successful. Ki az tatzliach et drachecha ve'az taskil, then you will be successful in your ways. Halot tziviticha, behold, I have commanded you. Chazak ve'ematz, be strong and courageous. Al tarotz ve'al techat, do not be afraid. Ki imcha Hashem elokecha b'chol asher telech. God is with you in everything you do, in everywhere you go. Okay. Give me a title for this paragraph.
Excellent.
You did that very well. He's strong and courageous. How many times does God tell you Yeshua to be strong and courageous?
Three
times in so many psukim. From Vav to Tet? Okay, three times in four psukim.
Chazak v'ematz.
You have to ask yourself the question. Right? How many times does God have to tell you, Yeshua, Chazak v'ematz? And it's interesting to note that each one has a little bit of a different twist. Slightly. The first Chazak v'ematz, Pasuk Vav. Right? You're going to conquer the land. So the first Chazak v'ematz deals with?
Chazak v'ematz 1 deals with?
War.
Right? The war, the nachala, the inheritance, the conquest of the land.
The second Chazak v'ematz? Chazak v'ematz ma'od.
Very strong and courageous. To guard everything that's in the Torah. To guard the Torah, to observe it, to study it, to engage in it. The Sefer Torah should not abandon your lips. And the third, Halot Zviticha Chazak V'Yamatz. That is a classic. Tautology. Be strong and courageous. Why? Chazak v'yematz. Al tarotz ve'al techat. Don't be afraid. Be strong, be courageous, don't be afraid. But why? Because I will be with you. So three times God tells Yeshua Chazak v'yematz. The first with regards to Kibush Haaretz, conquest of the land. The second with regards to Shmirat HaTorah, to observe, to guard the commandments, to hold on to the Torah, to study it, to engage in it day and night. And the third, God will be with you, don't be afraid. In what context will God be with him? Specifically, what context are we dealing with?
Going into the land,
conquest of the land. So here's an interesting observation. Three references to Chazak v'yematz, two of which are a charge to Yeshua to be strong and courageous because it needs strength and courage to conquer the land of Israel. To conquer a nation of seven great, strong armies, nations, Shiva Amim Rabim Gdolim Mimeka, to conquer a land of 31 separate battles in separate cities, to conquer a land north to south that is waiting for us with defensible borders, with walled cities, with an army of chariots and horses, that takes strength and courage. But when it comes to observing the Torah and keeping the mitzvot and keeping Shabbos and keeping kashrus and keeping the laws of Shemitah and Mishpatim and Dinei Torah, and when it comes to the laws of the Torah, Ve'gita b'yomam v'layla, that Rak Chazak v'yamatz me'od, that takes a lot of strength and courage. Conquering the land of Israel, be strong and courageous. But keep the Torah? Oh, there you got to be really strong and courageous, because that's really hard. Something not quite balanced there. Rak chazak v'yematz me'od lishmol lasot kochol ha'katub b'sefer b'Torah hazeh. I need a me'od for the Torah, for what? For keeping Shabbos? But only chazak ve'ematz when it comes to the conquest of the land of Israel? Military battles, nations stronger than you? That's chazak ve'ematz. But keep Shabbos, chazak ve'ematz ma'od. Something not quite right. I'm not quite sure we would have written it that way.
One is physical, and one is spiritual.
Therefore.
Influences when you're going into the land.
Go ask any soldier in the battlefield. I'm sorry. Disagree. Shabbos is easy compared to sitting on the ramparts. We like to think, we like to pride ourselves and say, oh, Shabbos is hard. You see, we're look how strong we are, right? We can keep Shabbos. Put it in comparison and put it into context of taking an army into a foreign land and conquering for 14 years and conquering nation after nation and city after city and army after army and putting your life on the line literally day in and day out. And tell me that doesn't need as much courage as keeping kosher? Without taking away anything from anybody who observes the mitzvot of the Torah, but put in perspective and with the greatest of respect, I think a lot more courage is required to pick up a gun and walk into the battlefield. So I'm a little confused at this chazak v'ematz me'od with regards to lishmor la'asot k'chol ha'torah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi. And not only that, but look at the number of psukim and the amount of words dedicated to each theme. From Pasuk Vav to Pasuk Tet. Just count the focus. Pasuk Vav. Chazak v'yamatz ki ata tanchil et ha'am hazeh et ha'aretz shenishbati la'avotam. You will conquer this land which I have promised. Pasuk Zayin. Rag chazak v'yamatz ma'od. Lishmo la'asot k'chol ha'torah asher tzivcha Moshe avdi. Al tasur memenu yaminu smol. Leman tasgir b'chol asher telech. Lo yamush sefer ha'torah hazeh mipicha. V'igita b'yamam v'layla. Leman tishmo la'asot k'chol ha'katuv bo. Ki az tatzliach et rechecha ve'az tasgir. All of that. And then, Allah tzivitichah, chazak b'matz, al teratz ve'al techat, ki imcha Hashem elkecha b'chol asher telech. So I have two short psukim dealing with the battlefield, and I have two very long psukim telling me, keep Shabbos, keep kosher, chazak b'matz ma'ot. In a newspaper, they measure the importance of a story by the length of the story. It's called column inches. Right? The value of a story, the importance of it is defined by how many column inches a story takes up. So how many column inches is dedicated to the issue of Shmirat HaMitzvot HaTorah in this paragraph versus how many column inches are dedicated to the conquest of the land of Israel when the subject of Sefer Yeshua is the conquest. Something's amiss here. Yeah.
Maybe it's just very far away, but I think like the first chazak v'ematz and the last one is give him courage. Like say to him, you know, you need to be you. Like it will be okay. And but the rak, amila rak, it's condition. So it's different. Because otherwise, why it's the rak?
Rak is a word that can mean many things. It can mean bad, it can mean however, it can mean condition, it can mean limiting, it can be expansive, it can mean, that's important, chazak v'yamatz. But this is really important, rak chazak v'yamatz ma'od. So clearly, I think that's the direction we have to go in relating this passage not just to the vacuum of Shemirat HaTorah in general, but to put it into the context of what's about to take place. I think that's really the only approach to make that this parak, that'll make heads or tails out of what's going on.
And that is to understand that the Torah is that God is directing Yahushua to the challenges in front of him, and his challenges are on two fronts. Challenge number one is on the battlefield, and that's clearly the immediate danger. Challenge number two is a much broader issue, which is the cultural challenge that the nations of Canaan pose for him and for the people. I facetiously described it as how to keep, you know, the challenge of keeping kosher and keeping kashrus. In our world, that's a facetious comment, because the reality is we don't really have a challenge to how difficult is it to observing a religious lifestyle today. So you can't go to a restaurant. I mean, it's a big deal, right? But the reality of the commitment to Torah in a world that was essentially hostile culturally and antithetical culturally to everything we stood for, and to immerse themselves into the midst of that world, that's a much bigger challenge. So whereas for us, Shmirat HaMitzvot sounds almost cliched, to the context of Bnei Israel entering into the land of Israel, that's the major issue. The major issue is the cultural challenge posed to them by their ensuing neighbors or future neighbors. And in that context, I think the challenge of Chazak V'Matzmod is very powerful. We're going to elaborate on that in a moment. David, you have a...
How come, if it's not such a big challenge, how come most people don't do it?
Granted, so there's all kinds of powerful forces at play that, you know, more people... Granted, I'm not taking away from anybody, but in context, I think we have to recognize reality on the ground. More people don't do it because they're not raised in it, because they're not valued in it, because... But it's not. The challenges of Shemirat HaTorah today pale in significance to what they were certainly even 100 years ago, and a billionfold in the time of the conquest of the land of Israel, when they were literally surrounded by hostile nations culturally foreign to who and what we represented. And we're going to elaborate on that in a moment. You'll understand why I say that. But I think that we have to put it into perspective that what we have today, there are other forces at play as to why people aren't as committed, but the reality is we're very spoiled. We're very spoiled.
Would you like in with the Shmirat HaTorah, the whole, you know, moral issue?
Well, we're going to get to that in a moment. That's where we're going.
I just wanted to say, it was also still very new. We're talking about 40 years in terms of what the Torah was and the commitment.
It's new. That's also true, without question. And just to put it in perspective, it takes Yeshua 14 years to conquer the land of Israel. It takes Bnei Yisrael 350 years of cultural assimilation before they lose the Mishkan, reach such a point of depravity that ultimately there needs to be some kind of revolution that will bring them back and reestablish Malchut Yisrael and the Beit HaMikdash 480 years after Yitzhak Mitzrayim. So to put it in perspective, we battle the nations of Canaan on the battlefield for 14 years. We battle the idolatry of Canaan for 350 years. That's Sefer Yehoshua and Sefer Shoftim in a nutshell. Yehoshua is a 14-year struggle to conquer the land. Shoftim is a 350-year battle to conquer the idolatries and the cultural influences of the nations around us. So you can, if you put it in that perspective, I understand the need for a Rak Chazak V'Matzmaod. When it comes to the battle for the soul of the people, especially in the backdrop, against the backdrop of the nations of Canaan, Rak Chazak V'Matzmaod. That requires special focus. I want to go one step further, because this passage, as many of the passages in Sefer Yehoshua are, this passage is built along the structure of a parallel passage in Chumash. And that's very common in the whole Sefer. And not by accident, obviously. There's a desire, there was an intentional desire to engage Sefer Yehoshua as a continuation of Chumash and as a carryover of the many of the themes of Chumash itself. And this is a very powerful example. If we turn to Devarim chapter 31, very end of Devarim. And if you read them in sequence, you understand that Devarim 31 is the end of Chumash, and it leads right into the opening chapter of Yehoshua, so it's almost like it reads one right into the other. 31, Lamed Aleph. Hashat Vayelech. Starting with Pasuk Zion, verse 7. Vayikra Moshe li Yehoshua Vayomer Elav. We're even talking about the same topic. God calls Yehoshua. Moshe calls over Yehoshua and says to him, Le'enei kol Yisrael, publicly in front of all of Israel, Chazak ve'ematz. Sound familiar? Be strong and courageous. Ki ata tavo et ha'am hazeh el ha'arat asher nishba Hashem la'avotam latet lahem v'ata tanchilena otam. Because you are going to lead the people into the land of Israel and you are going to conquer the land for them. Sound familiar? All right. What was the opening pasuk of Yehoshua Perek Aleph Pasuk Vav? Actually, you know what? Okay. I'll give it to you. I'll feed it to you. Make life easier for you. Take one and pass it up. Actually, the extras pass back up here.
Is this the first time the phrase is used?
Yes. Dvarim Lamed Aleph is the first time the phrase is used. And in Chumash, the phrase only appears twice. Both in this parak. Both here. Both to Yehoshua. First of all, it's a phrase that has a very military connotation. And it's usually used in a military connotation. Yehoshua is the only one to really go and conquer the land. It's a phrase that's only used for Yehoshua. It's used for Yehoshua twice here, and three times in Perek Aleph. That's it. It's not a phrase that appears throughout Tanakh. It's specific to the conquest of the land of Israel, and specific to the charge to Yehoshua. And on the chart that I've given you, you can see the parallel between the first two psukim. Chazak v'yamatz to Yehoshua ki etat tanchil et ha'amazeh. And in Dvarim, Chazak v'yamatz ki etat tavo et ha'amazeh v'yatat tanchilena otah. Same phrases, same concept, same introduction. Going back to Dvarim. V'Hashem hu ha'olech lefanecha hu yiyeh imach hu lo yarpecha v'lo lo yazvecha v'lo tira v'lo techat. God is with you. God will be with you. God will walk with you. God will not abandon you. Do not be afraid. Do not dismay. Sound familiar? That's exactly what Yehoshua is told. Al tarot, al techat, ki eyeh imach, ki imcha Hashem alakecha. Do not be afraid. Do not dismay, because God is with you. Exact same phrase. So far, the first two psukim that we've read in Devarim are essentially the bracket, the bookends of the charge to Yehoshua. In the middle of this charge to Yehoshua, we had the command to observe the Torah, to commit them to the Torah, Rak Chazak V'Yematz Me'od. What do we have here? Watch carefully. Vayichtov Moshe et HaTorah Zot. Moshe then wrote down the Torah. This is the end of Dvar. Vayitzna el ha-Kohanim b'nei Levi hanosim et Aron v'it Hashem, and he gave it to the Kohanim, to the Leviim, v'hakol zikne Yisrael. Vayitzav Moshe otam lemor, and he commanded them as saying as follows. Miketz sheva shanim b'moed shnat ha-shmita, the end of 7 years after the sabbatical year, v'chag ha-sukkot, the festival of Sukkot following Shemitah, b'voko Yisrael l'ra'ot apnei Hashem alakecha b'mokom ha-she'yivchar, when all of Israel will come aliyah l'rekel to the Beit HaMikdash, tikra et ha-Torah hazot v'neged kol Yisrael b'oznehem, publicly read this Torah in front of all of the people, the mitzvah of Hakel. Hakel et ha'am ha'anashim v'yashnashim v'yatach v'gircha she'bishalecha l'man yishmu l'man yilmudu v'yirau et Hashem alakecha v'shamru l'asot et kol divrei ha-Torah hazot. Gather the people, read everybody, men, women, and children, stranger, sojourner, everybody there, so that you will observe the laws of the Torah. Uvnehem ashelo yadu yishmu v'lamdu liyirat Hashem alakechem, children who did not know, children who are future generations, all of them will come, they'll learn, they'll hear, they'll fear. Kol yamim asher atem chayim al ha'adama asher atem ovrim et hayarden shama lerishta. Necessary, because you're going into a new land, you're going over the Jordan, you're going to conquer the land, necessary to regather the people every 7 years and reread, re-educate them in the Torah. God then says to Moshe, you're going to die soon. Kara et Yehoshua v'hityatzu b'Ohel Moed v'atzavenu. Bring Yehoshua into the Ohel Moed, into the Mishkan. I am going to charge him with his mission. Elach Moshe v'Yehoshua v'yitetzu ba'o mo'ed. Moshe and Yehoshua come to the Mishkan. Vayera Hashem ba'o mo'ed anan. V'yamod ha'anan al-petach ha'oel. God appears in the form of the cloud. I spoke last night about the distinction between the Eish and the Anan, the interrelation between them. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe, hincha shochev b'mavatecha. God says to Moshe, Moshe, I got news for you. Here's the good news, here's the bad news. The good news is, in chashochev imavatecha, you're going to die. That's the good news. So you'll say, so what's the bad news? The bad news is, v'kam ha'am hazeh v'zanah acharei Eloheinu echad ha'aretz, asher hu v'ashama b'kirbo, this nation is going to go, and they're going to lust after the nations in the land where they are going to enter. And they're going to be drawn into the world of idolatry. V'azavani, they're going to abandon me, and they will abandon the brit that I made with them. Yehoshua, Moshe, got news for you. It's going to happen. Guarantee it. I'm going to get angry at them on that day. And I will abandon them. I will hide my face from them. They'll be consumed with terrible calamities. And Israel will say on that day, you know why all of these calamities have befallen me? Because there's no God amongst us. That's not the reason. The reason is because of their own chait. I will hide my face because of all of the evil that they have done, because of the idolatry that they have done. Therefore, we need to make sure that they know in advance that when these terrible calamities befall them in the land of Israel, and the imminent destruction of the temple and the exile and the malchus, they should understand that this is because of their own chet. So what are we going to do? V'yata kitvu lechem et ha-shira hazot. Therefore, you are going to write down this shira. This song. Which song are we talking about? Which song are we talking about? Hazinu. Vilamdad b'nei Yisrael sima b'fihem. Teach it to b'nei Yisrael. Put it in their mouths. Educate them. Teach them. They have to know it. There are many mefarshim who say that sima b'fihem is a mitzvah to know Hazinu by heart. In fact, I remember till this day, both my older two girls went to the Eitz Chaim school in Toronto. One of the things they did with the girls in 8th grade, every single one had to know Hazinu by heart. I got tested. It was part of the curriculum. And the boys had to know Az Yashir. It says, Sima B'fiyim. It's a command. It's a charge. They have to know it. L'man tiyeli ashira azot le'ed b'vnei Yisrael. So that this shira would be a testimony. So that when these things happen, they shouldn't say, where was God? They should know. God has predicted this. Ki avienu al adama shenishbati l'avotav, I will bring them into the land that I have sworn to their forefathers. Zavat chalav u'dvash, the land of milk and honey. V'achal v'sava v'dashen, and they will eat, and they will be satiated, and they will become fat. Ufanal elohim acherim v'avadum, and they'll abandon me, and they'll go after other gods out of their complacency and wealth. V'niyatsuni, they'll rebel against me. V'aferet b'ti, and abandon my covenant. V'ayaki timtze'en otora'ot rabot v'tzarot, then all of these terrible calamities will befall them. They should understand. V'anta hashira hazot lefanav le'ed, then this song will serve as testimony before them. Ki lo tishachach mipi zaro, it shall not be forgotten from it, from the children. Ki yadati et yitzua shehu aseh hayom v'terem avienu la'aretz shenishbati, I know the soul of this people, I know the heart of this people, I know how rebellious they are, and how quick to abandon me they are. And God says, I want to guarantee that they'll understand that when I punish them, don't blame me. And that's what Shirat HaZinu is all about. That's some charge to Yehoshua, by the way. All of this is to Moshe. And who's standing there with him? Yehoshua. It's like, it's an amazing thing. God says to Moshe, go call Yehoshua so I can give him his mission papers, his credentials, whatever they call it. Moshe calls Yehoshua. Yehoshua, it says to Yehoshua, God has a very important message for you. Come with me. Brings him into the Mishkan, and God starts, Moshe, hey, this one's for you. These people are going to abandon the Torah. They're going to abandon God. They're going to worship idols. They're going to be punished. But don't worry, Moshe. You're going to die. You're not going to see it. But we have to write it down. Record it for posterity. We have to put it into a song. Hazinu. Vayechtov Moshe et hashira hazot b'yom ahu. Vayelamdat bnei Yisrael. Moshe recorded that song on that day, and he will teach it to bnei Yisrael. But in the meantime, we're back to the story. Vayitzav et Yehoshua bin Nun. Higanu. Moshe said, oh, Yehoshua, hi. You're here too. Good. Now I have a message for you, which is Vayomer Chazak v'ematz. Be strong and courageous. Because you are going to bring these people into the land and I will be with you. It's a fascinating structure. Starts with a charge to Yehoshua. Moshe says to Yehoshua, Chazak v'yematz, be strong, God will be with you. Then God says to Moshe, go get Yehoshua, bring him to the Mishkan so I can tell him the same thing. Chazak v'yematz ki yeimach, be strong and courageous for I will be with you. And in the meantime, Yehoshua sits there and listens to God explain to Moshe how these people are going to abandon God, they're going to abandon the Torah, they're going to worship idols, they're going to follow the nations of Canaan, and they will eventually be punished for it. Yehoshua, guess what? Rak chazak v'yematz me'od. Rak chazak v'yematz me'od. That's exactly it. Not enough chazak v'yematz. To conquer the land is easy. Chazak v'yematz. To hold on to the people spiritually in the milieu and context of the nations of Canaan, that's chazak v'yematz me'od. And the structure of this sefer, of this perek in Devarim, is exactly the same as the structure in Yehoshua. It's just condensed. In Yehoshua we have chazak v'yematz for the conquest of the land, chazak v'yematz for the conquest, and in the middle we have instructions about Shmirat HaTorah. In Devarim, Chazak v'yematz, the conquest of the land. Chazak v'yematz, again on the conquest of the land. And in the middle, we have two mitzvot. Hakel, which is designed to bring all the people together once every 7 years to teach them the Torah so that they don't abandon the Torah. And Ha'azinu, to testify before them what will happen if they do abandon the Torah. And the two anchors, Hakel on the one hand and Hazinu on the other, both the educational component and the threat or the guarantee of history that there will be retribution, Schar Va'onesh, that combines in Yehoshua 2, Chazak V'emas Me'ot. That's one part of the picture. I'm not convinced completely, however, that this constant refrain of observance of the Torah and not abandoning the Torah and commitment to the covenant is just a generic overview of a commitment to all of Torah completely. And I'll tell you why I say that. What part of Torah did the Melech read in the midst of Hakel? It says that he should read the whole Torah, but it's not true. King didn't read the whole Torah. What part of the Torah did the king read for the entire people once every 7 years? Selected portions of Sefer Devarim. Selected portions of Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim has a very unique, has a unique status for him. On the one hand, we call it Mishnah Torah. It's a repeat of the Torah. On the other hand, first of all, it's an odd repetition because there are many, many, many mitzvot that are in Sefer Devarim that don't appear anywhere else in Chumash. And there are mitzvot elsewhere that don't appear in Sefer Devarim. It's a strange concept of a repetition. Certainly a review of most of the history of Bnei Yisrael, but not all. Some pieces that are omitted. The question is, what is the role of Sefer Devarim? Or more importantly, is there a fundamental message in Sefer Devarim? Is there a chiddush? Is there a novelty? Is there something that Moshe is trying to convey to the people here in this Sefer that he hasn't conveyed earlier and that needs to be emphasized in this context? And that they need to gather the people once every 7 years, all the people, to repeat and to hear and to internalize not just a review of the Aseret HaDibrot or a review of the laws of Shabbos or a review of the laws of Kashrus, something more fundamental even that has to do with the fact that you need to gather all the people together once every 7 years and read this publicly. And it has to be read by the Melech of all people. One of the mysteries of Hakel is that if you want to educate the people in Torah purely for the sake of their spiritual edification, who is generally responsible for the spiritual well-being of the people? The Navi and or the Kohen. So Hakel really should be the domain of either the Navi or the Kohen. And yet, Hakel is the domain of the Melech. The Melech is a military leader. Why would I have the Melech sit there and read the Torah for the people? He's not their spiritual role model. Och in vey, if the Melech is a spiritual role model for the people, we're in serious trouble. So you could argue it's part of the Torah's desire for the king to recognize the value, the importance of the laws of the Torah, and the fact that the laws of the Torah are more important than the decrees of the king. The king has to carry a Sefer Torah with him. Even that, there are opinions that say that the Sefer Torah that the king carries with him is Sefer Devarim only. Don't forget that in biblical times, even Talmudic times, they didn't put all five Svarim of Chumash together. But that doesn't start until much later. Each fifth of the Torah is one Sefer, is one scroll. So if they're writing a Sefer Torah, if Moshe's writing a Sefer Torah, and he's giving a Sefer Torah, and he's commanding the king to carry a Sefer Torah, we're not talking about a Sefer Torah that we have, which is all five books together. So we're talking about one book. Which book? Devarim. There's something about Sefer Devarim that is unique. And that speaks to the Melech. And the charge that the Melech has to carry it with him, and that the charge that the king has to read it before the entire people once every 7 years. Now, you could say, and legitimately so, you could argue that Sefer Devarim simply encapsulates everything. It's got the history of Bnei Yisrael. It's got the majority of mitzvot in there. It's got the Musar. It's got the Tochacha. It's got Hazinu. Alamailas. Right? What's missing? So if you want to take one chumash of the, you're not going to ask a king to carry around Sefer Bereishit. That would be silly. What's in Bereishit? Shemot, Yitziat Mitzrayim. How many mitzvot are there in Shemot? Vayikra is all about the korbanot. Who wants to carry around a sefer that's all about the korbanot? Has nothing to do with the melech anyway. Bamidbar, we're back to stories. How many mitzvot are in Sefer Bamidbar? So of all of the five books of the Torah, the one that's most relevant, that speaks to the practical components of Jewish life on an ongoing basis, and that is most relevant to the melech, taka is Devarim. I always find it ironic. It's the one sefer of the five that we know the least. Because it's during the summer months when everybody's away and school's off. So our kids never learn it in school, and we never learn it, and we never discuss it. And of all the Sfarim and Chumash, it's the one we know the least. But in practical terms, it's the most important. In terms of fundamental halachot of Jewish life, there are more in Sefer Dvarim than any other Chumash. It's also the hardest to understand because it's hardest to see the map. It's hardest to see the trees, the forest of the trees. Because it's not separate, isolated parshiot. It's one speech. So you really, to understand it, you have to get a grasp on the whole sefer, which is a challenge and a half. So it's completely possible that we're dealing with the issue of the centrality of Sefer Dvarim as a whole. Hakel, Sefer Dvarim as a whole. I'm, however, not completely convinced. Because I think that there are a number of themes of Sefer Dvarim that repeat themselves over and over again, that appear only in Sefer Dvarim, and that are central to the entire context of the transition between the Midbar and Eretz Yisrael. And I've had to encapsulate the message of Sefer Dvarim perhaps more than as a central motif that speaks to that generation and to the melech and to the navi and to the people more specifically. I can't say more than anything else, but I think in this case you could argue that. Then I would suggest that we turn to Dvarim Perek Zayin. Chapter 7. Why do I start chapter 7? All right, so let me give you a little bit of an overview structure of Sefer Dvarim. If you go back to chapter 5, you'll find the Aseret HaDibrot. The Aseret HaDibrot begin, Sefer Dvarim is the Moshe's speech in Sefer Dvarim is divided up into three parts. The first four chapters are Moshe's explanation to the people why it took them 40 years to get where they are. And you'll take a look at the first four prakim and you get next year when you get to Sefer Dvarim, to Parshas Dvarim, and ask yourself, what's the common link of all the first four chapters? It sounds like it's an overview of all of Jewish history from Yetziat Mitzrayim. And that's, and Rashi makes the comment at the beginning of the parasha, Moshe, first pasuk, Moshe lists all the places where they camped and all the sins of the people. But ask yourself what's written in those four chapters and what's not written in those four chapters. So it talks about the Meraglim and it talks about the Slav and it talks about all the rebellions of Israel, but it doesn't mention Mamre Sinai. Why? Because the theme of that four chapters is not an overview of the history of Israel. It's a specific address to the question of why I couldn't enter into the land of Israel and why your parents couldn't enter into the land of Israel, why it took us 40 years to get here. But here we are. And then starts the section, from chapter 5, starts the section of mitzvot. A review of all the mitzvot of the Torah starts from the Aseret HaDibrot and will continue through up until the beginning of Parashat Ki Tavo. Vatchanan, Ekev, Re'eh, Shoftim, Kitetze, and beginning of Kitavo. And that's the central core of Dvarim. It's a list of mitzvot, one after the other. Essentially, that's the largest concentration of halachic material in all of Chumash. That is the core Mishnah Torah, the review of the laws of the Torah. The end of Parashat Ki Tavo is the beginning of part three, which is the Tochacha, the Brit. The Brit over the Torah that they had just reviewed. Ki Tavo itself, the Brachot and Klalot, followed by the Brit describing Parashiyot Nitzavim, Parashat Nitzavim. If you go back to what I said a couple of weeks ago about Shevet Menashe sitting in Eifer Yarden, it makes sense to why Moshe has to review all the laws of the Torah for them and then to reenact the Brit. We talked about that once before. But the reality is that that's what Sefer Dvarim is. It's a review of all of the mitzvot and culminating with the Brit. Chapter 5 is the Aseret HaDibrot that starts that process. But chapter 6, before he gets into the details of the laws, he takes a little bit of a detour. And what chapter 6 deals with, from the end of chapter 5 through all of pretty much all of chapter 6, I'd call it the Hashkafic background. Shema, description of the concept of loyalty, the Brit with the Avot, the prohibition of idolatry. It's the context of Yitziat Mitzrayim, all related to ultimately the prohibition of idolatry. I can't explain this in detail now, but take my word for it. Sefer the elaboration of the mitzvot follows, if not numerically, at least conceptually, follows the Aseret HaDibrot. And at least in the first half of the Aseret HaDibrot, almost in sequence. So what happens is the speech starts with the Aseret HaDibrot themselves, and then an elaboration, dibra by dibra. Aseret HaDibrot starts with Yitziat Mitzrayim and the prohibition against idolatry. Perek Vav is an elaboration on Yitziat Mitzrayim, Ki Shalcha Bincha Machar, the famous question of the Chacham, and an elaboration on the prohibition of idolatry. Both the positive side of Shema Yisrael, paralleling Anochi, as well as the negative side of the prohibition of Lot Tenasu Et Hashem Elokechem, not to test God, not to abandon God, not to worship idols. And from there you can trace it forward. Parashat Ekev, which deals with the centrality of the place that God will choose to put his name there, Makom HaShivchar Hashem L'Shekhen Shmo Sham, is a parallel to the third Dibra of Lot Tisa Hashem Elokecha L'Shav, not to take God's name in vain. Includes Shabbos, and you work it through. As you bear that in mind as you go through Sefer Dvarim next year, and you'll see that Sefer Dvarim, the mitzvah section of the Sefer, is essentially an elaboration on the Aseret HaDibrot. Which brings us to Perek Zayin. Ki v'yecha Hashem alakecha la'aretz asher atav Hashem alirishta. When you will enter into the land of Israel that God will give you as an inheritance. V'nashal goyim rabim mipanecha. And God will remove from before you great nations. Hachiti, ha'girgashi, v'ha'amori, v'aknani, v'aprizi, v'achivi, v'ha'yevusi. How many? It's one of the only places in Chumash where all seven appear. We talk about Shiva Meknan. Most places there only ever six or ten. So there's a chazal that says that Girgashi ran away, and that's why they're often left out of the list. It's the only place where all seven appear. Shiva goyim rabim v'atzumim mimecha. Seven nations greater and stronger than you. As if that's supposed to be words of encouragement, make us feel better. Unetanam Hashem alakecha lefanecha v'kitam. God will give them into your hands and you will smite them. Don't worry. That's not a challenge. Conquering the land, conquering the seven nations, that's child's play. God will give them into your hands. Done. Now comes the hard part. Hacharem tacharim otam. You must utterly destroy them. Lo tichrot lehem brit. You shall not make with them any kind of covenant or treaty. Velo techanem. Do not have mercy upon them in the land. Velo titchaten bam. Do not marry them. You shall not allow your daughters to marry their sons, nor their daughters to marry your sons. Prohibition of intermarriage. This is the only place you'll find it explicit in the Torah. Why? Because they will take your children and abandon them, cause them to abandon the path of God. Yavdu alehim acharim, they will worship other gods. Becharaf Hashem b'chem, God will be angry at you, v'yishvitcha meher, and destroy you quickly. Ki imkota asulahem, this is what you must do to them. Mizbechotehem titotzu, their altars have to be broken. Umatzevotam tishaberu, and their monuments, religious monuments, have to be smashed. Va'asherehem, the Asherah is a form of idolatry. It's a tree, but it is the idolatry. It's actually the biblical name for the idolatry of Ashtoret. Ashtoret is in biblical terms, there are two idolatries that were indigenous to the land of Canaan more than others. One was known as Baal, and the other was known as Ashtoret. Baal was essentially a god of rain, and Ashtoret was his consort. And that's why it's a tree. Because rain seeds the ground, and from that grows the vegetation of the tree. So there's a sexual connotation to the imagery of Baal and Ashtoret. Pagan gods usually had male-female counterparts. Baal was the male counterpart to the consort, which was Ashtoret, and it had a very sexual connotation in terms of the nature of the idolatry itself. It was an idolatry of rain, rain symbolizing seed, vegetation in the ground. And that essentially was the Canaanite, the local Canaanite god, because Canaan was a nation, it was a land that depended upon rain for sustenance. Pagan gods were usually those that provided life in some way. That's why in Egypt the local deity was the sun and the Nile, because they provide life. In the land of Canaan, life is given by rain. Hence the gods were the gods of the rain and vegetation, which were the pair of Baal and Ashtoret. The Asherah was the tree that symbolized the deity of Ashtoret. Asherahem tigadeun. Those trees have to be uprooted. Ufsilehem tisrefun be'esh. And the idols burnt in the fire. You can't allow any remnant of the idolatry culture to remain. Not a single strand. Not an altar, not a tree, not a leaf. No museums to ancient cultures past. No museums of natural history. No totem poles sitting in the Museum of Jerusalem. Every mark of idolatry has to be removed from this land. Why? Ki am kadosh ata Hashem Elokecha. Because you are a holy people unto God. God has chosen you as his chosen nation. Amongst all the nations. And don't think for a moment, don't think it's because you're numerous, more numerous than any other nation. You are amongst the smallest of nations. כי מאהבת השם אתכם ומשמרות השבועה שנשבע לאבותיכם הוציא השם אתכם ביד חזקה. God has done so out of his love for you and out of his oath to your forefathers. He has brought you out of Egypt with a strong hand. ויפתחה מבית עבדים מיד פרעה מלך מצרים. וידעתה כי השם אלוקיך הוא אלוקים הקל הנאמן שומר הברית והחסד לאוהביו ולשומר מצוותיו לאלף דור. You know that God is a God of covenant, a God of kindness, a God who observes his covenant of kindness to those who observe his commandments for 1,000 generations, and Mushalem l'sonav el panav l'ha'avido, and who repays those who despise him and seek, and he will too destroy them. Lo yachel l'sonav el panav yishalem lo, he will punish him directly. The rest of this paragraph is a separate issue. What's essentially the central motif of this paragraph? A little what? Well, forget, leave out the God of kindness for a moment for now, but what is the basic central theme of this parak? What is the central mitzvah of this parak? It's a war against the culture of Canaan. Every remnant of the culture of Canaan, the idolatrous indigenous culture of Canaan, must be removed. This is a war that will continue until every altar, every matzevah, every monument, every tree that was worshipped is completely destroyed. There are no ifs, there are no ands, there are no exceptions. There are no, oh, but you know what, it's such a beautiful building. So what was it used for idolatry? But let's preserve it, let's turn it into a, I don't know, into a community center. And we'll put a plaque on the wall that says, here once was an idolatrous temple of Baal. Who's going to know the difference? No. This is a battle that has to create an idolatry-free zone in the land of Israel. And there are no exceptions. That's the fundamental theme of this passage of Sefer Dvarim, and it's repeated in Sefer Dvarim several times. That's harsh. But it's a necessity. And it's a necessity because the Torah is well aware that if you don't, the alternative is worse. If you don't, the alternative is, if you let the idolatries remain, if you let the monuments and the museums of idolatries of Baal stand in the land of Israel, somewhere along the line, somebody is going to revive it. If you allow the culture of idolatry to remain, somebody will bring it back to bring it back to life. It's not only the idolatry that has to be destroyed. That was not meant as a pun. It's not only the idolatry that has to be destroyed. It is also the nations that are idolatrous that have to be destroyed. The war against the nations of Canaan was a war to the end.
What to the end?
Take a look, for example, again, the end of this parak. You'll see it a second time. And if you follow this theme through the entire Sefer, you'll see over and over and over again, you'll see this concept appear. Chapter 7, verse 24. V'natan malcheihem biyadecha. God will give these kings into your hands. V'avadata et shemam mitachat hashamayim. And you will destroy their name from under the heavens. Lo yityatzev ish b'fanecha. Nobody will stand before you. Ad hishmitcha otam, until you completely destroy them. Psilei Eloheihem tisrafun ba'esh. Their idols, the carved images, you shall destroy by fire. Lo tachmod kesef v'zahav aleihem. Do not desire their gold and their silver. V'lakachta lecha, and take their gold and their silver. Pen tivakesh bo, lest you stumble therein. Ki to'avat Hashem Elokecha hu, it is an abomination of God. V'lo tavit to'aval betecha, you can't bring an abomination into your house. V'yachedim kamohu, or you will become destroyed like them. Shaketz t'shaktzenu, it has to be completely disgusting to you. V'ta'ev t'ta'avenu, and completely an abomination. Ki chedim hu, it's, God has declared it off limits. We're talking about the psilim, we're talking about the idols. We're talking about not only the worship of the idols, but the preservation of the idols. There can't be so much as a stick of idolatry left in the land of Israel. And if you think that's harsh, turn to chapter 9. Actually, you know what? Skip chapter 9. Let's go straight to chapter 20. Straight to chapter 20, starting with verse 10. Parakhav Pasag Yud. Ki tikrav al ili lachem alea. And you will approach a city to wage war against it. The karata ilah le shalom. The first thing you must do is offer a hand of peace. Mi'ayim shalom ta'ancha ufatchalach. If they will answer you with peace, then great. Kol ha'am hanimtza ba yulach alamas v'avaducha. Then all of the local inhabitants of that city, they will serve you. They will pay taxes to you. You are the sovereign power, and if they want to accept your rule and your authority, then isn't that? Let them pay their taxes and become citizens of the country. V'imlo tashlimimach, and if they won't make peace with you, v'yastaimcha milchama, and they will go out to war with you, v'tzartaleh, and then you will besiege them. Untena shamalakecha biyadecha, v'kitat kol zchura l'ficharev, then you will wage war with them, you can fight, you can kill all the males, which is another biblical way of saying all the combatants. As far as the non-combatants, women and children, etc., those are, will essentially, once you conquer the city, they will become yours. And you can consume the spoils of war. That's standard fare in the ancient world, spoils of war. Kein ta'ase l'chol le'arim ha'rechokot m'cha ma'oda shelo me'arei ha'goyim e'le'ena. That's true for all of the foreign nations, faraway nations. You want to go into, I don't know, Saudi Arabia and wage war, that's what you have to do. Nations outside of the domain of the seven nations of Canaan. Rak me'arei ha'amim ha'ele. As far as these nations are concerned, which nations? The seven nations of Canaan. Asher Hashem Elokechon eten lecha nachala. As far as those seven nations that God has given you, their land as an inheritance, there the rules are different. The rules of engagement are different. Namely, lo techaye kol neshama. No soul may be left alive. Ki acharem tacharimem. You will utterly destroy them. Hachiti, ha'emori, ha'knani, ha'pizi, ha'chivi, ha'yevusi. Six. Right? My Gergashi ran away. Kasher tzivcha Hashem elkecha, as God has commanded you. Leman asher, what is this for? Leman asher lo yilamdu etchem lasot kechol to'avotam, so that they don't teach you all of their abominations asher asu l'Elohim, that they have done to their gods. Vechatatem la'Hashem Elokechem, and you cause you to sin to Hashem your God. It's not only every altar and every tree and every leaf of idolatry that has to be destroyed. It's every idolater. This is a war until the very end. And you understand now, if that's the mandate of Sefer Dvarim, and it is the mandate of Sefer Dvarim, the harshness of the conquest of Canaan that is articulated here doesn't appear anywhere else in Chumash. It is perhaps the most profound mandate of Sefer Dvarim. You understand why when God tells Yehoshua, Chazak v'amatz, be strong and courageous because you're going to conquer the land. Chazak v'amatz, k'yeimach, be strong and courageous because I will be with you. But guess what? You also have to observe the law. And the observing of the law, specifically the laws of Sefer Dvarim, and specifically the laws pertaining to the conquest of Canaan, laws that are counterintuitive to the soul of the Jewish people, laws that are counterintuitive to the moral fiber of who and what we are. Go back to Sefer Dvarim, every one of the Avot, and look at how much effort they go through to avoid any kind of conflict and any kind of battle. From Avraham and Lot to separate at the very beginning lest they have any kind of conflict, to Avraham's brit with Avimelech, to Yitzchak's brit with Avimelech, to Yaakov and Esav. It's against the very core of our being to engage in military battle. And here the Torah goes out of its way to tell us not only are we to engage in military battle, we're to engage with in a military battle. Ad chorma, lo techaya kol neshama. No soul can be left alive. Men, women, children, animals. Is that what the Torah is commanding us to do? Every altar, every monument, every tree. I can't even hold on to works of art for their aesthetic value. Idolatry, free zone in the land of Israel. Free of the idolaters, free of the idolatry. So difficult is that challenge that we never do it. We never do it. That's the reality of the challenge of Sefer Shoftim. That's exactly how Sefer Shoftim begins. We did not rid ourselves of the nations of Canaan. We did not remove them from our midst. And the reality is, they were, as the Torah describes it, a thorn in our side, influence of idolatry in the land of Israel over and over and over again, drawing our children and our people into the idolatrous gamut to which they lived. And Sefer Shoftim is exactly that description for 350 years. Spiral. It takes 14 years to conquer the land. 350 years it takes us to engage in a culture war against the idolatrous indigenous population, which we never really win. And it's to that issue, I think, that Yehoshua is instructed, Rak Chazak V'Amatz Me'od. Because it takes a very special kind of courage to be able to properly engage that kind of battle. And a special kind of loyalty, and a special kind of faith.
It was never done, but wasn't that kept in mind? The attempt was there?
The attempt, the effort, the challenge, the constant reiteration by the Navi, it's a back and forth. It'll go up and down. We, B'ezrat Hashem, we'll finish Yeshua, we'll get to Shoftim. Shoftim is a 3-year course. We'll go through that in detail.
What I meant was, I mean, Yehoshua didn't say, oh, we can't do it, we're not even going to try. Mm-hmm. There was always that concept that...
No, for sure. Certainly didn't say we're never going to do it. He's never going to throw in the towel. On the contrary, Yeshua was very loyal to it. But Moshe was warned. But God said to Moshe very clearly, with Yeshua standing there, understand that there's a good likelihood that they're going to fall short of the mark on this one. Because we're not talking about how, you know, whether it's easy or difficult to keep Shabbos in St. Louis. We're talking about a fundamental battle that cuts to the core of the future spiritual integrity of our people, that is at the core of the brit with God, and that at least on the surface of it, and I will say it here so you understand before you leave this room, at least on the surface of it, sounds, feels almost immoral. And that brings us to the question that I wanted to address or to introduce today, and will be the subject of our discussion for the next few weeks. Yes?
It reminds me of what the Arabs are doing. Yes, that's what they believe.
I was thinking the same
and
thing.
And that's why they're they'll never accept Israel in the Middle East because that's exactly what they believe.
Right.
I made it very clear, and I'll say it again. No. I will say it again because I want everybody to hear it. It's very important. It is incredibly tempting and very easy to draw parallels between the subjects of study in the world of Tanakh and modern politics. But I caution against doing so. I would never do it in the context of the Shir, and I caution people against doing so for the simple reason that when you take the theoretical study of a text out of the realm of the theoretical into the realm of the practical, there are... Sorry. Try it. Let's try that again. When you take the world of the theoretical into the realm of the practical, there are a number of additional variables that you have to take into consideration, halachic variables, that do not always line up neatly with a pure study of a text of Tanakh. So there are many parallels. And from time to time, they kind of surface in our minds. But I've consciously chosen not to, A, connect them to political issues, and B, not to develop political views on the basis of a study of Tanakh. That becomes very dangerous. But let me just conclude with this. The moral question of the conquest of Canaan is an enormous issue. What we have done today is introduced it. We have seen it in its context, in its harshest form in Sefer Dvarim. I have suggested even that it's the very awareness of how difficult the moral issues of the conquest of Canaan are that motivates God to say to Yehoshua, Chazak v'ematz me'od, specifically pertaining to the morality of the conquest of Canaan, not necessarily the practicality of the conquest of Canaan. The practicality is easy. The morality is much harder to address. We will, B'zrat Hashem, over the next 2 weeks, I assume, we have a class in 2 weeks' time? December 24th, is there a class?
No,
school is closed. Okay, so the next week and the week following that, at least
no, the next week the school still
flows. There's no school the 24th, there's no school the 31st. Wow. Okay.
Next
week there is school, the 17th. We are here next week, then we're off for 2 weeks. All right, unless you want to reconvene at the Young Israel, but anyway, figure that out. But we are certainly meeting next week. We will begin to address the moral question of the conquest of Canaan. We will do so on a number of fronts. I want to address the question of what is idolatry and why is it that the Torah goes to war against idolatry, the gadol, as they say in the old country. What is it about the culture and the world of idolatry that motivated or mandated such a harsh response? Number two, what exactly is the command, lo techayah kol neshama, to obliterate of each person? Is it literal or not? Is there an option? We will address the question of how the conquest of Canaan takes place. And number three, although not necessarily in this sequence, I want to address a little bit the question of the moral right to the land of Israel from a biblical perspective, not a modern perspective, from a biblical perspective. We'll address all those issues. So the next unit is the moral questions of the conquest of Canaan, B'zrat Hashem. We'll start today. We'll continue over the next couple of weeks.